3.9 FM in Accra, also live on Love 99.5 in Kumasi, myjoyonline.com, and affiliates in all 16 regions of Ghana, including Jata FM Karaga, Jakpa FM Wipe, A1 Radio Bolgatanga, Sky FM Sunyane, Space FM Takwa, and Radio Wawa, live on X Spaces, Facebook, and YouTube. The Midday News is supported by Petrosol Platinum Energy, Energizing Dreams. Coming up, Speaker of Parliament Alban Bagbin set to rule on eligibility of Pandai seat following majority and minority clash over the Tamale court ruling, as the majority whip declares Matthew Nyindam has no business coming to the house.
So by oppression of law is no longer a member of this house with a voice. The orders of the court has been duly served on parliament. It must even be marched out of the chamber.
We have details, plus tell you what the MP at the center of the controversy's position is ahead of that ruling. Also coming up, ECOWAS pushes back against Ghana's new 100-cedi airport charge in the 2026 budget, raising questions about whether the country is breaking regional aviation rules. We have details of that. Also, European Union warns of an imminent risk to Ghana's democracy in the wake of rising violent extremism and coup d'etats in the sub-region as it deploys a special envoy to visit Ghana in the coming days.
Nobody is protected. Nobody is safe from the circles of the waves of insecurity that we see in the region.
We exclusively hear from Nigeria's vice president, who says the solution goes beyond military intervention.
But mind you, there's an incestuous relationship between economy and ecology in the Sahelian zone. And we need kinetic and non-kinetic solutions to the challenges.
Meanwhile, security analyst says ECOWAS needs external help in dealing with the instability in Guinea-Bissau.
ECOWAS, as a lead institute for resolving the Guinea-Bissau crisis, is a no-no because it has failed to achieve its primary aim.
In sports.
Now, since Ghana qualified for the World Cup, government has inaugurated two committees to oversee the country's participation at next year's tournament. But why do we need two for the same tournament? You hear from the chief of staff in a moment.
And we'll bring you the story of a 17-year-old Ghanaian leukemia patient detained in India after treatment because his family cannot afford the bills.
Without financial capability, it is going to be very difficult for one to go through all what I'm going through and come out successful.
And we'll take you live to Kumasi City Mall, where the Republic Bank Love FM Habitat Fair is set to take off. These and more with me, Mamiesi Nyamiche Thompson. This is Joy News Independent. FIA is expected to give an official ruling on whether the Member of Parliament for Pandai, Matthew Nyindam, is eligible to conduct business in the House. This follows deep controversy between the minority and majority on Wednesday, when the majority insisted that the Tamale High Court ruling that annulled the constituency results effectively barred Matthew Nyindam from carrying himself as an MP in the area. This clash led to an abrupt adjournment of proceedings yesterday. James Averji reports. We'll bring you that report much later, but let's head to Parliament now and speak to Kwekwa Santi, our correspondent. Kwekwa, ahead of this ruling, though, is the MP expected to be on the House?
Well, according to Matthew Nyindam, he still considers himself a member of Parliament, and his side backs him in this determination. In fact, the whole of yesterday, he was in the chamber. Yesterday, he spoke to Grace on Top Story. He said he will be in the chamber. He will be there to do the legitimate business of his people in Pandai, because he considers that having filed an application to stay the ruling of the court and also filed a notice of appeal, it is constructive notice enough that he is dissatisfied with the decision of the High Court and is challenging that. Despite the majority, stance that merely filing these processes in court do not operate to stay the decision of the High Court. And so they do not consider him as a member of parliament. Sitting hasn't started, so I haven't seen Matthew Nyindam around, but from everything he has said and what his leader has also said,
right, Kwekwa Santi, thank you for that update. Now, government says the repeal of the COVID-19 health recovery levy will not significantly impact its revenue. The tax introduced during the pandemic continued to be collected to clear related debts. Its removal will cost the state 3.7 billion cedis in revenue, but offer relief to individuals and businesses. Finance Minister Dr. Kesio Atoforsin says ongoing tax reforms will boost economic activity and raise revenue. James Avegi is going to join me in studio now with details of this, and he joins me now. James, so first, how much has the state collected so far since it took effect in May 2021?
Well, Mami, data from the Ministry of Finance shows that Ghana collected a total of 8.7 billion Ghana cedis from the levy. Simply put, the levy has brought in about 2 billion Ghana cedis a year on average.
And what does the repeal mean for the ordinary consumer?
So for the consumer who actually purchase on the market, this means that the levy in session, you would have been charged 1% extra on goods and services purchased, mm-hmm. but now that will be no more. In fact, it shows that the VAT bill should be decreasing by now by between 1% to 1.5% if this is fully implemented.
But do you share the details of the new measures in this new VAT bill?
The measures include the abolishment of the VAT on mineral reconnaissance, as well as prospecting aimed at reviving the exploration investment, as well as reversing years of stagnation in the greenfield development. It would also reduce the effective VAT rate from 21.9% to 20%, an increase in VAT registration threshold from 200,000 Ghana cedis to 750,000 Ghana cedis, relieving thousands of microfinance, micro and small enterprises in the trading sector.
Thank you so much, James, for that update. Well, Minority Leader Alexander Fanyumakin has criticized the government for imposing new taxes such as the energy sector levy and increased electricity tariffs, claiming that citizens had been subjected to an 18% rise in electricity tariffs this year alone. Listen to the debate on the floor of the House.
You were collecting $3 billion a year from COVID-19 for 4 years without COVID and told us that ELEV was like Akuba.
Minority Leader Alexander Fanyumakin, that we've been speaking to the Ghana Union of Traders Associations, Charles Kusi Apiakobi, is Executive Secretary of the Ashanti Business Owners Association.
The government gave us a promise that they're going to reform our VAT system. And one of the key things we're going to do was ensure that they coupled the VAT to that of the levies so that we can claim all of those levies and VAT system. So coupling it alone becomes a savings to business because previously it cannot claim about 6%. Now 1% COVID have been taken off, which is a savings. Coupling the aid fund, the national health insurance to VAT also becomes a savings to us. So it's a relief to businesses. However, like the Olivers, we always ask for more. We want a tax system, a VAT system that is very competitive with the sub-Saharan African countries. So that when they agree the analysis and saying that when they look at sub-Saharan African countries, tax GDP is about 18%, Ghana is trailing below that. You understand it's about high taxes that is making compliance very high.
Now, Ghana's proposed 100 cedi airport charge in the 2026 budget, intended to fund major upgrades at the country's airports, has come under scrutiny from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, which is asking Finance Minister Kesio Atoforsin to review the levy on the grounds that it may violate the regional common policy on aviation charges, taxes and fees adopted by member states in 2024. Under this policy, which takes effect in January 2026, Ghana and other ECOWAS countries are required to abolish 4 existing aviation-related taxes as part of efforts to harmonize charges across the sub-region and reduce the cost of air travel. ECOWAS says introducing a new airport charge at this time runs counter to that framework. And Joy News editor Fred Smith joins me in studio with more. Fred, tell us more about this.
So we highlight sections 5, 6, and 11 of the Supplementary Act. Section 5 specifically abolishes ticket tax, tourism tax, solidarity tax, foreign travel tax. Now, Section 6 sets out the modalities for aviation charges implementation. In Section 6.1, member states are supposed to apply a 25% reduction on two charges in the aviation sector in the ECOWAS region, namely the passengers service charge and security charge. In Section 6.2, it indicates that airport and air navigation service charges are applied only towards defraying the cost of providing facilities and services for civil aviation. Now, Section 11 also compels member states to take all necessary legislative and regulatory measures for effective implementation of the Supplementary Act. Member states are also compelled to communicate to the ECOWAS Commission the measures taken in implementing the Act. At least for now. At least for now, these are the portions most relevant.
Well, Joy News is also learning that ECOWAS chair is calling on the finance minister to reverse the 100 cedi charge. Why?
Well, a statement signed by ECOWAS president Omar Touré emphasized the 65th ordinary session meeting of authority of heads of state in Abuja in 2024 on reducing airfares in the sub-region and the agreement to abolish unrelated taxes. He went on to urge the finance minister and other member states in respect of the law not to introduce new charges or taxes, and if that has been done, steps be taken to remove them.
Thank you so much, Fred, for that update. Now we go to Guinea-Bissau. The European Union is warning of an imminent risk to Ghana's democracy owing to the rising cases of violent extremism in the Sahel and coup d'etats in the West African sub-region. Guinea-Bissau is the latest country to join the ever-increasing list of military overthrows, with its president and other officials under arrest following yesterday's coup. Now, Ghana has since joined the African Union and other international bodies to condemn the coup. Head of our diplomatic and foreign affairs desk, Blessed Soga, is in the studio with me. Blessed, we know government has condemned the coup. What more is government saying?
Government's obviously unhappy in principle and supporting, the position of the international community, especially the African Union and the sub-regional body ECOWAS in condemning this coup. So that has been the position also on this. Beyond that as well, what we know so far about those who've done the coup, that involves the Brigadier General Denis Nkanha, who's now saying that they've taken total control over the country, Guinea-Bissau, now arresting the president, Umaro Embalo, and other state officials.
Well, we know that the election observer communities in Guinea-Bissau have also condemned the seizure. Tell us more.
I was just pointing to that, and that includes, in fact, it's a joint statement, which is also including the monitors, the African Union, and a group of eminent elders within the West Africa sub-region. They're asking Guineans to be calm at the moment, and they, quote, deplore the blatant attempt to disrupt the democratic process and the gains that have been made and achieved thus far. And they are requesting the African Union and ECOWAS to take necessary steps to restore constitutional order.
Well, they recently had the elections. What's the status of that vote, though?
It's unclear what the way forward would be in this case. If the electoral body then decides that it will declare the results of the Guinea-Bissau elections, they will proceed to do so. If the outcome favours President Embalo, that will be a challenge for him. He won't be able to be sworn in because now he's under arrest together with some other officials.
Thank you, Blessed. Now, with Guinea-Bissau's current political situation, here's a report capturing the country's historical political instability.
Guinea-Bissau gained independence from Portugal in 1974, but from the very beginning, its new state struggled with weak institutions and deep political divisions. The first major rupture came in 1980 when Prime Minister João Bernardo Vieira overthrew the sitting president. The coup opened the door to a pattern that would define the country for decades. Since then, Guinea-Bissau has lived through civil war, assassinations, and repeated military takeovers in 1998, 2003, 2009, and 2012. Just days after contested elections, soldiers have seized power.
Instaurado pela alta chefia de diferentes ramos das Forças Armadas, o Alto Comando Militar para a Restauração de Segurança Nacional e Ordem Pública.
Meanwhile, the AU, ECOWAS, and the West African Elders Forum have strongly condemned the military takeover, describing it as an unacceptable disruption of the democratic process.
Well, security analyst Professor Kwesi Enin, speaking on the Super Morning Show, is skeptical about ECOWAS's role in resolving the ongoing political instability in Guinea-Bissau.
ECOWAS as a lead institute for resolving the Guinea-Bissau crisis is a no-no because it has failed to achieve its primary aim. So there are two or three possible things that might happen. First is that the military might try to entrench themselves. I'm sure within the next month or two, they will come with a 5-year redemocratization plan. But the coup d'etat shows us the fragility of the relationship between the military and the political elite. But we may also see a period of considerably deepening instability, which would be very dangerous for the sub-region.
In a related development, Nigeria's vice president has told Joy News' Blaise Asuka in an exclusive interview on the sidelines of the just-ended European Union-African Union summit in Angola that he believes in an African solution towards solving Africa's security challenges. Nigeria is one of the latest countries in West Africa reeling under the effects of terrorism, with some schoolgirls recently abducted.
There is a need for the EU to widen its perspective and have robust engagements with Africa on a pedestal of mutual trust and confidence. We are not beggars. We want to deal with EU on a pedestal of mutual interest, respect.
In terms of peace and security, how are you collaborating with the EU to tackle issues of terrorism?
Well, EU is our wonderful partner on the issue of combating illegal migration, terrorism, and banditry in the Sahelian zone. But mind you, there's an incestuous relationship between economy and ecology in the Sahelian zone. And we need kinetic and non-kinetic solutions to the challenges. And I believe EU is a continent that has engaged with Africa for over 500 years, understands our challenges, understands our problems, and collectively we are going to marshal resources towards addressing those challenges.
Now to WA. Ghana Water Limited says it will expand water supply to the greater WA area and parts of WA West using the Jambusu Water Treatment Plant. Board Chair Eric Adama says the plant, commissioned in 2017, is underused and running at only 40% capacity. He revealed this during an inspection of the facility. Join News' Upper West correspondent Rafiq Salam has more.
The plant, which has a source of water from the Blackwater River Basin, has a daily capacity of 15,000 cubic meters. It is currently underutilized as it is operating 40% of its capacity due to a plethora of issues, including incomplete distribution networks. Conducting the board members around the treatment plant and sharing with them how the station operates was the station manager, Ali Al-Hassan. The main concern of the board members was the quantity of water at the source and the quality of water produced.
Currently, we are having a turbidity around 58 NTU. The color is 148. As at yesterday, the color is 148. Even though at the onset of the rainfall, because of surface runoff, we do have high levels of turbidity that hovers around 1,900. But currently, we have gone past that period, so the quality is good now.
Board Chairman of the Ghana Water Company Limited, Eric J. Biligu Adama, said he was happy with what he saw.
The board has assured management that next year, 2026, we'll procure pipes for them to at least increase the usage from the 40% to about 60%. It doesn't make economic sense we are having this and people in WA are still struggling to dig boreholes and taking water from boreholes that is not well treated.
Reporting for BBC News, Rafiq Salam, Jambusu.
The illegal mining case involving embattled Ashanti Regional Chairman of the New Patriotic Party, Bernard Entry Bosiako, popularly known as Chairman Wuntumi, is back in court. Fatawu Bayaga was there and is in the studio with me. Fatawu, what happened in court?
So the business of the day was for case management conference, but Wuntumi's lawyers argue that the prosecution failed to submit the necessary witness information and related materials. This prompted them to say that they are going to file a motion on Monday asking the court to compel the prosecution to release the details. So speaking with the media after the court's hearing, Wintumi's lawyer Andy Apia Kobi said if the prosecution continues to withhold the requested documents, the defense will be left to conclude that there are no such information.
At the last agenda, there was indication that prosecution wanted to file further documents. So we inquired whether such documents have been filed. Unfortunately, we have not been served with such documents. Prosecution indicated that it does not intend to file any further documents, and therefore they were ready for case management. It is also our expectation that they will have filed some documents that we will rely on, which documents have not been filed, but which we believe such documents are within the possession of the prosecution. So we pray the court that we will come in with a motion praying the court for an order directed at the prosecution to serve us the documents that we need. When they serve us those documents, we will rely on them.
And that was Andy Apia Kobi, his lawyer for Chairman Wintumi. You're still listening to the Midday News here on Joy 99.7 FM. We'll take a break. When we return, we have sports, and also we'll bring you the story of a 17-year-old Ghanaian leukemia patient detained in India after treatment because his family cannot afford the bills.
Without financial capability, it is going to be very difficult for one to go through all what I'm going through and come out successful.
And then we'll also take you live to the Kumasi City Mall, where the Republic Bank Love FM in use. Achu Tavaklu is here with sports. Achu.
Hi, Mam Yesi. And you'll notice that since Ghana qualified for the World Cup, government has inaugurated two committees to oversee the country's participation in next year's tournament. The second, an interministerial oversight committee, is chaired by the Deputy Chief of Staff, Stan Dugbe. He has GFA chairman and the sports minister, as well as former Black Stars captain Abedi Pele, in a team that makes up 10. Here's Chief of Staff Julius Debra on the significance of this and why it is necessary.
We need to remind ourselves that the World Cup is not just about what happens over 90 minutes. It is about what we do with the 4 years leading up to it and 4 years that follow. The road to 2030 begins now. This oversight committee must lead with accountability, speed, and national consciousness. The time for scattered efforts is over. We cannot afford to enter 2026 with the mindset of 2014 and 2010. Let us correct what must be corrected and amplify what can be built. Let us lead with clarity. Let us act with urgency. Let us project Ghana with discipline and pride.
That was the Chief of Staff, Julius Debra. Amisi, are you convinced that we need two committees?
No,
for the World Cup?
No comments for now. but Fred is ranting about Arsenal scoring
about
yesterday.
Arsenal. They did
well. They did well, eh?
Yes.
Okay. So now it looks like he has a lot of energy.
Oh, he has.
Okay.
We're waiting for what happens on Sunday.
We'll see. Thank you, Achu. Now, diagnosed with deadly acute myeloid leukemia at 17, Blessed Ahmed Okoh's life hangs in the balance. With compounding debts of over $60,000, Blessed is being detained in India due to his family's inability to pay the bills. The family is making a passionate appeal for support. Joyneuss's Irama Akwa has more in this report.
20-year-old Blessed Kuju Amejeko has been fighting a deadly blood cancer, acute myeloid leukemia. In July this year, after months of fundraising and the kindness of strangers, Blessed finally traveled to India for a life-saving bone marrow transplant. The procedure was successful, but the journey to survival is far from over.
Without financial capability, it is going to be very difficult for one to go through all what I'm going through and come out successful.
Blessed has been on admission in India for the past 4 months, where he underwent a successful bone marrow transplant. But the medication, transfusions, and follow-up treatments that kept him alive have built a massive bill the family did not anticipate.
There were a few complications along the way. I went there to be the donor for my brother, but we weren't a match. They had to end up using my dad, who ideally was too old to be the donor. Some tests were run. My brother had antibodies against my dad. He had to undergo immunotherapy and some other forms of treatment, which were in the initial estimates.
The hospital is demanding for their money, and out of the ransom, we've only been able to pay just a little. And the word out is, if we are unable to pay the rest, the treatment discontinues. So I plead with the government, with Ibrahim Mahama, ministers, companies, NGOs, churches, fellow alumni students of Armed Forces Senior High, students of Ghana Telecommunications.